Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Today marks the 20th anniversary of Metrolink, the light rail system with roots here and in the Metro East. It was a long time in coming with lots of doubting Thomases, most of whom have been proved wrong. Critics complained that Metrolink didn't really serve the largest potential commuting populations, yet there were 17 million boardings on the 46-mile system this past year. Today, a lot of people wish they had greater access to it. It's a far cry from what was predicted by those doubters. One man who never doubted the system's potential is Les Sturman. He's Southwestern Illinois Flood Prevention District Supervisor and former Executive Director of East-West Gateway Council of Governments. He lobbied tirelessly for light rail for years before it became reality. He joins me in studio. Also with us is Jerry Blair, Director of Transportation with East-West Gateway. Ray Freem is Metro's Chief Operating Officer. He joins us by phone. And joining us a little bit later will be John Langa, Metro's Vice President for Economic Development. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us, and happy anniversary to you all.
A pleasure to be here.
Les, I'm going to start with you, if I may, just to reminisce a little bit. I remember very well following you around 30 years ago, I guess it was now, as you were promoting light rail in St. Louis. Why was it such a tough sell?
Well, you know, I think St. Louis had been without rail transit for a lot of years at that point, and people had various pictures in their minds of what it would be. People would picture the New York City subway system, which at the time, and remember this was the early 80s, was not perceived as safe and comfortable. They had thoughts of railroad trains rumbling down the middle of streets. And people had a lot of different visions in their mind, and there were also some social issues, frankly. I mean, racial and others, about connecting some of our neighborhoods. I mean, it was just a lot of different things, and I did take a lot of abuse at a lot of public meetings and a lot of evenings and church basements and other places.
Some of those social issues, by the way, have not gone away. I mean, there's still some complaints about that sort of thing.
There are, but I think for the most part, visions of people getting on Metrolink and stealing TV sets and getting back on the train and going back home have probably been proven false. But certainly the issues are perhaps less visible and less articulated, but they're still there.
What do you think finally put it over the top?
Well, you know, nothing succeeds like success. And, until the very day it opened, I mean, literally, people did not believe that this system was actually going to exist. And then the day that it opened, in the middle of the great flood of 93, ironically for me, it didn't get real big headlines at the time because it was the flood that was at the top of the fold. But you couldn't squeeze another human being onto those trains. I mean, it was so crowded. There was a free fare weekend, I think it was. And immediately people started riding it. And then, within a couple of weeks, you couldn't find anybody who was against it.
One of the things I remember hearing was people complaining that it doesn't go anywhere, that it didn't go places where people really wanted to go in any great numbers. But how did you make those decisions with regard to where it would go?
Well, I mean, we've got some age on us, Don, and good memories here because, the most popular question at every public meeting was who wants to go from East St. Louis to the airport anyway? Mm-hmm. And, I had to point out that there were actually stops in between. The initial route was a product of a series of compromises. It utilized primarily an old freight railroad. And freight railroads don't necessarily go exactly where you want to go. On the other hand, we had a tunnel right through our downtown, which was just where you would put it if you would build it brand new. It didn't go every place. And, at the time, ironically, again, people didn't want it. You didn't want it in their neighborhood, and business folks didn't want it near them. I mean, we had a terrible time dealing with, Union Station and the Galleria and the folks at the old post office and one of its first iterations at redevelopment. you know, and all that sort of changed overnight when the system opened. But, you know, perceptions were very different then.
Going back to the social issues aspect of it, I remember very clearly that the idea of bringing light rail into St. Charles was put to a vote, and voters out there rejected the idea. How much did or did that hurt the overall prospect for light rail?
Well, I think in some real respects, it did hurt it. The initial plan actually provided for there to be the secondary route to Clayton, and we had the money to do it. We had the federal money to do it, and we got all sorts of heat from primarily University City, to a lesser extent Clayton. The people just didn't want it there, and you know we didn't have eminent domain. We couldn't force it on anybody, and ultimately decided to pull back and not do that. But it's a shame in a lot of ways that the initial route didn't include that extension to Clayton as well.
Yeah. I'll get this question out of the way because I'm sure somebody would ask it, some of our callers, if I didn't. Why didn't it go straight up Highway 40 out to Chesterfield? So many people, we've talked about this before. I know the answer to this question, but many of our listeners probably don't.
There are a number of reasons. One, it would be extraordinarily expensive. And the first route we really did, I won't say on the cheap, but we did it very economically. It would have been extraordinarily expensive to go up Highway 40. Highway 40 is it's where the cars are. It's not where the people are. And, you know, where do you put the stops? How do people walk to stations in the middle of Highway 40? If you talk to folks in Chicago where there actually are transit lines up the middle of highways, that they would say they'd never do anything like that ever again because it just doesn't work very well.
Jerry, let me turn to you. Will anything like that ever happen, some route straight out west somehow to all that population?
Well, we've looked at something. We did subsequent studies of what we called the Daniel Boone Corridor, which was from Clayton West. And we did look at the I-64 corridor, and we looked at a Page corridor. And getting all the way out to Chesterfield is probably not the appropriate length for a light rail line. I mean, that's more like commuter rail, not light rail, where you really need to be integrated in the community. So there's some prospects for going north through Page and maybe someday extending it beyond 270. But I don't think anything's on the drawing board right now of going directly out to west to Chesterfield. That's just too far, and frankly, the demographics are wrong. I mean, once you get beyond Clayton for a length along I-64, it's not the demographic that rides transit, except for people going to ball games and things like that. And this isn't the kind of investment you make simply to provide that kind of access, although it's great that it does. You're not going to invest in that.
And yet, Ray Frame, let's get you into the conversation. I do hear a lot of people, and there's some irony here because there was initial opposition, as we've just heard from Les. There are a lot of people who wish they did have access, who are in outpost communities like Chesterfield and others. It's ironic, isn't it?
I think it's ironic, but I think that Jerry is 100% accurate with his response as to why, you know, it goes where it goes and you know, the corridors that are being studied now. I think that it is an investment, and you have to make wise investments into corridors that are going to give you the maximum amount of use and potential.
Are you where you want to be right now with regard to this whole system? I mean, obviously, plans are for growth, but as of this moment, are you satisfied with where you are?
Right. Well, I mean, we would love to see expansion of the system, and eventually we will get there. I mean, I think these things have a pace to them. I mean, and I think that you're looking at something maybe every 10 years. We just opened in 2006, a major corridor. And, you know, we have to come up with the financial resources and basically the regional plan to support, you know, the next jump-off point. But, you know, when an investment like this is made, it creates a tremendous opportunity for the transit system to be used in many different ways. For example, you know, bus rail transfers, things of that nature. It creates the transit options, you know, geometrically almost.
This whole connection between rail and bus is an important one for you, isn't it? I read somewhere, and the Beacon had a story today, maybe it was there, that light rail may have saved the bus system.
Well, there's no doubt about it that through the 70s and early 80s, the transit ridership was declining, you know, tremendously. And you know, it didn't really turn around right away in 1993 with the opening of the system, but by 1995 and into the 2000, you're absolutely right. The utility of the transit system changed, and then the way we operated our transit system completely changed as we understood the utility of a light rail system like this and the speed of operation. And so we began to transition to a system that uses the trains to give speed along its corridor, and then the buses are free to actually give the system some reach.
Jerry, this is a big deal, Jerry, isn't it?
Yes, it is. If you go back to the early 1980s, I mean, Metro had a system of 78 to 80 million riders a year. And the year before Metrolink opened, that ridership had dropped to about 38 million riders. So the system was in decline, and putting this asset in there had a tremendous benefit of really helping build a strong framework for the larger transit system.
Les, is this something that was anticipated back in the day?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of ironies here. One of the reasons that East-West Gateway was involved in the early part of the project and doing not just the planning but the design work was that Metro, then Bi-State, as it was known, didn't want it, didn't believe that Metrolink was in their best interest, refused to take it on. And we believe that, in fact, this was the thing that would save the transit system by providing a mode that was actually competitive with the automobile in terms of speed and cost and comfort. And that all proved to be true.
Ray, what does it cost to run the system?
The entire transportation system?
Well, let's just focus on light rail for the moment.
Well, I haven't broken the cost down, but, the light rail system, what the beautiful thing about it, I look at it not in terms of total cost, but in terms of subsidy per passenger. And so it's the lowest cost a mode. You know, it requires the least amount of operating support from the local taxpayers. At the break, I'll go get my budget books out and give you some specific answers. But the entire transit system is costing in the $240 million range. And it produces any number of benefits for the region. They don't always come back and show up in my bottom line.
What I was actually getting at was the fact that the ridership, ticket prices, does not pay for the system, not by a long shot.
No, the fare box recovery ratios, basically, we're talking about for the Metrolink system is between 23% and 25%. That's pretty consistent with cities of our size. I mean, the rail systems in New York and Chicago with high density, high volume riderships do better than that. But we are very competitive, extremely competitive with other systems, like Metrolink as they've been deployed around the country.
I have to take a break. We'll do that now and come back and talk about more about Metrolink on this 20th anniversary, 1993, right in the middle of the Great Flood, as Les Sturman has pointed out. Les Sturman was the man who, with East-West Gateway, who really got the ball rolling on this, along with others, but he was instrumental in Metrolink. He is in studio with us. Ray Freem joins us by phone. He is Metro's chief operating officer. Jerry Blair is also in studio. He's the director of transportation, that is, with East-West Gateway Council of Governments. Back to continue our conversation in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll continue our conversation on light rail in St. Louis, Metrolink, in just a moment. As we pointed out, this is the 20th anniversary of the start of that service here in St. Louis. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom staff is following today. Petitions are being submitted to the city today by a group wanting to put an initiative on the ballot prohibiting the city from granting tax incentives to companies engaged in fossil fuel extraction and to any entity that does $1 million or more of business with them. And Illinois Lieutenant Governor Sheila Simon, daughter of former Senator Paul Simon, is expected to announce that she will run for Illinois Comptroller. Those stories and more this afternoon on St. Louis Public Radio and throughout the day on stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation about light rail in St. Louis. With me in studio is Les Sturman, former executive director of East-West Gateway Council, Council of Governments. Jerry Blair is director of transportation for East-West Gateway. Ray Freem joins us by phone. He is Metro's chief operating officer. I'd like to talk a little bit about the proposed routes. I know five routes are under consideration, as I understand it, Jerry. Is that correct? Can you give us any sense as to where they might be going?
Well, we've studied a number of routes, including we've done feasibility studies showing routes into Madison County. That's probably a long way off. There's no funding to – no local funding source to accomplish that. We had done a study out to St. Charles, as you referenced earlier. That was done back in the late 90s, and because of the lack of any kind of sales tax there or revenue to support transit, that concept was dropped. We've looked at a project that goes from the Shrewsbury Station south through the center of South County down to Butler Hill. That was a favorite of Buzz Westfall at the time. Unfortunately, when Buzz passed away, the enthusiasm for that route passed also. But more recently, we did a conceptual design study for the north side, south side corridor through the city of St. Louis. This would be an in-street light rail that would run basically from the north city boundary to the south with possible extensions into the county. That's a promising one, as is one that the county is strongly supporting to go from Clayton to Westport. That would be up the Interbelt or I-170 and then out the Page corridor. That would be in a rail right-of-way most of the way.
But, Ray Freem, as you indicated before, going in perhaps 10-year cycles, we're a long way from any of this, aren't we?
And, again, that is kind of a regional decision. Metro only participates in that at the kind of last stages. We do support the all of the studies that were done by East-West Gateway, and they were all incorporated into the regional transportation plan. That can be found on the website, www.movingtransitforward.com. .org. But in general, yes. I mean, the region, financed completely the last rail alignment. And so in order to attract the resources to build the next one, it requires an operating plan that finds favor with Washington and a financial plan. And so we're pulling together now the financial plan aspects of that and putting the region in a position to be able to apply, for federal support for a Metrolink extension at some point in the future. But that's going to take a number of years. One thing that would facilitate that, obviously, is if the state of Missouri actually started funding transportation needs, for the major metropolitan areas. And one of the things that St. Louis is kind of handcuffed by in decisions like this is that for cities of 2 million, regions of 2 million, normally you get 25% of your funding capital from the state and maybe 20% of your operating costs are covered by the state. That is not the case in Missouri. And so our development, our growth capabilities are going to be hampered, by those factors.
Jerry, for the record, I think the state is contributing less than 1%, is it not?
Yes, it is. Well, listen, I think it's less than $1 million this past year. Ray, you could correct me if possible or if necessary. But, yeah, the lack of a state program is a serious issue here in St. Louis, as well as Kansas City. And in some of the rural areas, the fact that we don't have strong support for transit at the state level because it's needed throughout the state, regardless of the form that it takes.
Les, what about state cooperation and support during your day?
It's pretty much the same story, if not worse, actually. This has always been an issue. And, of course, the river in Illinois, it's a very different story. And the state provides a lot of support and helped get that rail route built to Belleville and Scott Air Force Base.
More than 20%, isn't it? Something like that?
It's a healthy number.
Before we move on to something else, one quick question to you, Jerry. Do you think we are likely to be looking at another request for a tax increase as we advance plans for expansion?
I think, we need to come up with a combination of federal, state, and local resources, whatever that may be. And given what's happening at the federal level with kind of the stagnation of the transit program there, I think we just have to wait and see what they do. It's going to require a lot of federal participation for us to expand light rail in this region further than we have.
And the feds aren't exactly awash in dollars right now.
No, they're not.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to another part of this story. The subject of Metrolink's role in helping foster economic development was the subject of a St. Louis public radio project we call How We Move, which was launched this morning. In the weeks ahead, we'll be looking at transportation and infrastructure from all angles. In our inaugural report earlier today, our Tim Lloyd looked at Metrolink's effectiveness and sometimes lack of it in generating economic development.
Hop on the Metrolink sometime and look out the window. You'll see the full range of the economy flying by, from blight to upscale and all the places in between. And should you by chance take a seat next to Paul Hubman and strike up a conversation, when you come to a stop, you might see something else. Opportunity.
I think some frustration started to build up. The Metrolink hasn't really drawn the type of development or the amount of development that Metro or the municipalities or region kind of had expected.
Hubman is a project coordinator for the East-West Gateway Council of Governments, a federal agency in charge of transportation planning in the St. Louis region. For about a year, Hubman took the lead on a massive study aimed at untangling a web of reasons why Metrolink stops haven't become roaring economic engines. Specifically, they looked at something called TOD, or transit-oriented development. It's a buzz phrase that basically means using light rail stops as hubs for housing, business, and retail developments, often connecting them with trails and surrounding them with green spaces. What they found was a complicated series of hurdles, tripping up economic growth at stations on either side of the Mississippi River, starting with outdated zoning rules. While most regulations on the books are great for suburban housing, Hubman says they can slow economic growth near light rail stops. As a fix, Hubman says municipalities can switch to codes that look at the size and scope of a building instead of whether, for example, it's residential or commercial.
The way we used to build neighborhoods before, say, World War II, it allows it. It doesn't demand it. You can still build, you know, suburban-style neighborhood that we have, but it actually allows for these other types of neighborhoods that have market demand.
But that last part, market demand, is tricky. For the most part, the St. Louis region is like other mid-sized metropolitan areas around the country, developed over the past several decades to accommodate cars, not mass transit. On top of that, Metrolink's main alignment sits on an old freight rail line, which was built through the backyards of communities, not through their hearts. But to understand what the future may hold, we'll leave the train and go to a boardroom in Metro's headquarters at Laclede's Landing. John Lenga is Metro's vice president of economic development and says the region is growing, but at a slow pace. So given all the challenges, you'd think Lenga would hedge his bets when talking about the prospect that economic development will sprout up near Metrolink stops. But he's actually pretty bullish.
The demographics are changing in front of us.
And Lenga says the demographic shifts that have him feeling optimistic are happening at both ends of the spectrum. First, he says market studies show that the majority of people 19 years old or younger are more interested in internet connectivity than owning a car. That's a game changer, he says, and represents an emerging market. Then, Lenga says, there's people like him.
Folks in my demographic get older, and maybe you don't want to live in the burbs anymore. And we're seeing that as particularly in the Central West End. Getting a lot of folks who are moving in that are empty nesters 10 years ago probably wouldn't have considered that relocation within the region, but in fact are, and transit to them is critically important.
Also on the table is building a new stop for the Cortex development, a massive biotech hub located by the Central West End. The thought being that if you want economic growth near a light rail stop, just go ahead and build a stop where development is going to happen. But not everyone thinks TOD, transit-oriented development, is necessarily the kind of economic kickstart the region is looking for. Casey Barnes is a policy researcher with the conservative-leaning Show Me Institute. She says for the most part, TOD only happens when taxpayer subsidies are dangled in front of developers, and that's not a sound public investment.
We've seen TOD pop up in other parts of the country, and we haven't really seen any evidence of economic development success.
Barnes says if the market wants development near a Metrolink stop, then somebody will build it, and government doesn't have a role in manipulating that demand. Not to mention the fact, she says, that big picture, adding development near Metrolink stops through subsidies can end up costing other parts of the economy. For example, some TOD projects are aimed at adding retail space, but Barnes says that just makes the climb to fill already vacant storefronts that much steeper. And in that sense, she says taxpayers wouldn't really get what they're paying for.
We already have overdevelopment of retail in the region, so my question is, why should we create more?
Of course, not everyone thinks the invisible hand of the market in and of itself can build the kind of economy that's best for the region, let alone what surrounds Metrolink stops. Chris Kramer is the president and chief executive of Beyond Housing, a nonprofit that's focused on improving low-income housing options. On a recent afternoon, he's standing in a sea of concrete that surrounds the Rock Road Metrolink station in North St. Louis County. Kramer says the plan is to surround the Metrolink stop with affordable housing, and that you can't really build that kind of socioeconomic springboard without subsidies.
it's a great tool to say, okay, if we have your place that you live a walking distance from the light rail stop, you can take light rail to your job and you can save $5,000, $6,000, $8,000 a year and not having to drive your car every place. That's real money in your pocket.
He says in the long run, those subsidies pay off because the extra money in people's pockets will ultimately filter back into the economy. Tamara Shepherd grew up around here and says the project has the potential to be transformative. She helped lead community meetings during its planning phase.
This community needs this boost, you know, in light of everything that's happened with the Normandy School District. We need the boost to know that this community still can survive. We still can make it.
Shepherd says at least when it comes to developing near the Rock Road stop, this isn't really about macro or microeconomics, changing demographics, or a running debate on what, if any, role government should play in a market-based economy. Instead, she says building near this stop on the line is about community and how transit might help connect its members with where they're hoping to go. I'm Tim Lloyd, St. Louis Public Radio.
And Tim launched a brand new project for St. Louis Public Radio with that report this morning. It's called How We Move. We're taking a look at transportation and infrastructure from many different angles in our community. Joining us now by phone is John Langa. You heard from him just a moment ago in Tim's report. John, thanks for being with us.
John, thank you.
I wanted to ask you, in terms of the bullishness that was cited in Tim's report, how do you take advantage of this?
Well, actually, there's some areas that are already taking advantage of it. For instance, at our convention center station, the MX, the Mercantile Exchange Development, which is the future home to the Blues Museum and PI and others, is doing quite well with the metro station there. In fact, in talking to them, getting a some amount higher on their apartment rents because of the proximity to the station. The cap rates are better at the Brentwood Meridian because of the station and that opportunity. That in fact, if it wasn't, they have a well over 95% occupancy rate for the private commercial space at that facility, and a lot of it is because of proximity to the Metrolink. The other thing, Don, we're seeing that is a very recent phenomenon in the last few years is we are now seeing private sector proposals come out that have in their proposals for their brokers, for their developers, that say development must be at or near transit. And Don, again, that's just new. That is new to this region. That's something that just wasn't there 5 years ago.
But is it fair to say that the development has not achieved what you had hoped, far below expectations?
Well, Don, that I don't know. I've been with Metro all of 2 years, and in that time frame, since 2011, there's been $1.2 billion. That's with a B, of new development that's either under construction, committed, or completed, that's within a half mile of our Metrolink stations. Now, that's, I think, a pretty good number. So I don't know exactly how to measure that, if that's what folks are hoping to achieve, but I think it's pretty remarkable.
What about the comment made by the young lady from the Shumi Institute that we are already overdeveloped?
Don, I really don't know what to say on that. You know, most retail development in the region is in a lot of office and industrial development. It's based off TIF, enterprise zone, tax credits, transportation development districts, community improvement districts. You know, it may be something seriously worth looking at, but right now across the region, it's ubiquitous that those incentives are provided.
We read a story in the St. Louis Beacon today in which it was stated that most people live too far away from the Metrolink stations to really make it practical for them to use. And Chris Kramer in that report was talking about making residential development a priority. Thoughts on that?
I think that's a great idea. And even back to what Chris touched on, and by the way, Beyond Housing does tremendous work. They're making a difference, changing communities in front of us, which is just amazing. But one of the things he touched on is it the average on the studies across the country, it costs you between $7,000 and $13,000 a year to have a car. And that's great. But if you want to save that money and you want to live near transit, that's an option also. And we're seeing more interest in that from different income strata, from moderate to low as well as upper income. Again, that's real money in people's pocket at the end of the day.
Well, John, I want to thank you so much for spending a little time with us. I'll ask the other gentlemen with me in studio, Jerry and Les, anything you'd like to say or add to John?
Well, I think this comment that we're not seeing the development that we anticipated, I think it needs to be taken in context. You know, when we were pushing the first route through, the question was who was going to ride it on day one? And I would respond, oh, we don't care about day one. We care about year 20 and to see how things are coming along. So it's a long-term effort. A lot of patience is required.
And Jerry, anything you'd like to add to
Well,
that?
I would say I think we have seen a lot of development, maybe not transit-oriented development, around Metrolink stations. It's been a good thing. But I think you have to realize, as Les said, this is long-term. This isn't something that sprouts just out of the ground. And we're a slow-growing region. And, you know, there's only so much investment money to go around. And so what we have to do is start creating different patterns that people see can work. And that's what we attempted to do in our TOD study that we recently completed.
Ray Freem, anything you'd like to say to this?
Well, again, I'm more into the operation of the
sure.
System. But as I ride the system and, you know, I walk these lines as they were being built, you know, over the years. And I remember, you know, places in East St. Louis that were just trees. And now there's whole housing developments that are right there next to Metrolink stations. I agree with Jerry. It's a slow growing region. But I do think that Metrolink has probably attracted its share of development, you know, because of what it is to the region.
To that point, I have an email here from John, and he writes, "Gentlemen, the area just to the west of Sunon Station has been cleared and a car dealership has been built. Note the irony. Please tell me further development in this area will include a commuter parking lot for users of Metrolink. Thank you, John." Can we tell him that?
There is a potential for some park and ride capacity up at near the Sunon Station, yes.
It's 80 parking spots just on the east side of it.
All right. Well, John Lange, again, my thanks to you for being with us, and we'll talk to you again at some time soon, I hope, about progress in this area.
Anytime. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. That's John Lange, Metro's Vice President for Economic Development. I have to take another break. We'll do that now. I also want to invite calls from our listeners. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air. Your thoughts on the first or the next 20 years for Metrolink. We'd love to hear from you. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation on Metrolink. It's the 20th anniversary of the start of that system. With me in studio is Les Sturman, former executive director of East-West Gateway Coordinating Council. Jerry Blair is director of transportation with East-West Gateway. And joining us by phone is Ray Freem, Metro's chief operating officer. Okay, we have some calls coming in. We'll start with Alicia, who is a frequent caller. Nice to hear from you again.
The pleasure is absolutely mine.
Go ahead.
I wanted to know if there is a site where one can go to find where the Metrolink goes and the routes and everything.
Ray Freem, I'm sure you'll be happy to answer that question.
Oh, sure. Again, are you talking existing or proposed?
Yes.
Okay.
Existing, I'm sure.
MetroStLouis.org. We'll tell you everything you need to know about our bus and rail system, okay, and schedules and routes and where all the stops are and, you know, what buses serve each stop, where there's park and rides. All of that information is contained there. And in terms of the future, again, it's just a kind of repetition of the studies that East-West Gateway has done, but it's been adopted formally by Metro, and that is movingtransitforward.org. So those are two independent websites. MovingTransitForward.org talks about the future and the next 30 years of potential expansion opportunities.
Thank you.
Okay, and thank you for the call. Before we move ahead, I wanted to get back to this to the transit-oriented development part of the story, because, Les, you said something before we went on the air that I think is worth mentioning, and that is you object to the term.
Yeah, and I think good development is good development. And the fact that, we've had people understand how to develop around highway interchanges, and we don't call it highway-oriented development. And, when you label things, it creates certain images in people's minds whether it did when I was trying to sell Metrolink, whether it's certain kinds of people or conservative or progressive economics or whatever. I think we need better development practices in this region all around that allow us to take advantage. I mean, people want to walk more than they did. I'm You know, I'm an empty nester. We moved in downtown St. Louis a few years ago, specifically to be near Metrolink and all the stadiums. And now we got a grocery store and dry cleaners and all the other stuff that makes it wonderful for us. That's just good development practice. And developers can make money doing that, and that's what we need to convince them. I mean, creating a label like this, I'm not sure is all that productive.
Jerry, what are your thoughts on that?
I'll take his admonition. I think it's we tend to label things just to make it easier to talk about them. But I think in this case we're talking about a special condition, which is the Metrolink and its station sites. And I think the use of the term is warranted in that context. I would agree with Les, however, that we should just be talking about good development rather than transit-oriented development or all these special categories.
Yeah, I have to confess, when I first heard it, it took me a minute to figure out what it meant. But that's just me, perhaps. Ray, do you want to weigh in on this, or shall we move along?
No, go ahead and move along.
Okay, let's take a call from Phil, calling from St. Louis. Phil, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Yeah, I want to say I use Metrolink. It allows my wife and I to share one car rather than own two, so it does save a ton of money, like you were saying earlier. But my question is about making some of the more suburban stops on the Clayton and Shrewsbury end of the line more walkable. Those communities, when they were built, were more walkable, and development since then has allowed more car type, lots of parking lots and things like that. And when I get off at the Richmond Heights stop, it's not the best walk heading over towards the Galleria or the University Club Tower, which is where I work. And no one clears the snow on the sidewalk during the winter. I was wondering if Metrolink could try to partner with some of the other government agencies like the county and the city of Richmond Heights to try to improve that, to make a little bit better user experience, as you're walking away from the Metrolink.
Ray, let's give that one to you.
Okay. We do try to walk with and study the pedestrian flows, the major pedestrian flows, leading away from some of the more walkable stations, and make sure, working with various public works departments, that the road plows that come along, they tend to plow the snow off the street and put them firmly on the sidewalk. And so in a lot of areas, we have people that come along behind that and then try to clear the sidewalks again. But it is a work in progress, I'll admit that. We're looking at, in the future, beginning to develop, a different modal transportation that would have maybe some small shuttle systems, around these Metrolink stations, to distribute people in that three-quarter mile or mile and a half area around a Metrolink station. And we're studying the concept of it now. I mean, there's new technologies that are allowing the cost of that to come down, but it's still pretty expensive. I can't promise exactly when that would happen. But I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll make sure that we, as we go into our winter meetings, I'll talk about that particular station and see what we can do to keep those sidewalks clear.
Great. And one other comment. I previously lived in Chicago and used an app that shows the GPS locations of every bus and train on the CTA system. Is there any chance that St. Louis would be able to get that for the Metro anytime in the future?
Absolutely. It's a work in progress. It's one of our amenities that we talked about in our Moving Transit Forward long-range plan. We're deploying the radio infrastructure now that will allow the buses to communicate back where we are. Here I am, here I am, here I am. And eventually that will be turned into an application from your cell phone. You'll be able to look at any bus stop, and it will tell you what buses are coming by and how long it's going to be till it arrives. The same thing will apply to train. One of the things that we're trying to do that's kind of unique, usually the cities have different systems for both the bus and the rail. But because our system has so many transfers, people take a bus and then they take Metrolink for a part of their trip and then another bus, we're really the first to try to integrate it into one system so that from one application you're going to be able to see the buses and the rail cars. And eventually even our call a ride assets for people who are ADA customers. So, yes. I would estimate that we're going to start rolling some of this information out in message boards and things of that as early as 2014, with hope to have the app developed and at least tested, beta versions out in 2014 as well.
Great.
Phil, thank you so much for the call. Boy, this new technology is changing everything, isn't it? It's really quite incredible. What do you gentlemen here in the studio think of this this idea of having a shuttle that Ray just mentioned? I had not heard that before. It's just another layer, it seems.
Yeah, well, it increases the accessibility to Metrolink when people are beyond easy walking distance. But I think the caller made a very good point in that as we think about these stations and future stations, the walkability of those stations really needs to be taken into account beyond the boundaries of Metro's properties, because you know people will walk a half a mile, and we need to make it easy for them to do that. And not only will that give them better access, but in fact, it starts creating something within that community when you have walkability and when you start developing amenities around these stations.
Les, you looked at a number of different systems when this whole thing was getting started. What's the best one you saw?
There are a number of good ones. San Diego had recently been completed before we started. Portland was underway, which were kind of prototypes. In a lot of ways, we kind of did it differently here. We knew we only had a limited amount of money. We had to use existing technology. We were using an existing freight line. We made a lot of design compromises just to get this thing done, probably compromises that Ray grits his teeth at now, having to operate the system. But had we not done that, there wouldn't have been a system. And when we finished, people were coming here to look at what we had done because we had done it for such a low cost. I like pointing out to people that at the time, the cost to build our system was less than it was costing to do the engineering for Los Angeles' system. So we had done some good things. I think some of those lessons have been lost on us, not on other people, but on us sometimes.
What do those good systems have that you wish, and Jerry, you as well, and perhaps Ray, wish we had here?
Well, what you were talking about before, which is sort of integration of the system into the fabric of the community, there was so much skepticism when we were building it that we just couldn't get cooperation from a lot of the cities, a lot of the commercial enterprises. I mean, if you look at so many of the stations, you'd ask yourself why we did it that way. Even on the later extensions, I mean, if you look at the stop at Meridian and Brentwood and how that's, it's very difficult to get to some of those adjacent developments there. It's almost as if we created obstacles. The stop at the Galleria, we had come up with a plan a long time ago to integrate that better with the surrounding developments, but we just couldn't get a lot of cooperation. You see the practice is different in other places. Portland has done a wonderful job of integrating their system with the community, and people love it.
Jerry, any thoughts?
I think that's the key. It's really integrating it within the community, not separating it out like we have in the context of the St. Clair extension and the original Metrolink.
Does this fragmentation that we talk about so often in so many communities within our region here, is that a problem for the planning?
Oh, it's always a problem for planning. It's hard to come up with a coordinated and kind of comprehensive plan when you have so many different points of view out there demanding to be heard. And so everything tends to become compromise, and it keeps you from doing, in many cases, what really ought to be done.
Waters things down.
Right.
Waters things down. Let's go back to the phones. We'll bring in Pam calling from Clayton. Pam, thanks for being with us. Go ahead. Okay, Pam seems
Hello?
To have... Oh, yeah, go ahead, Pam, if you're there.
Okay, yes. I was calling in regards to a wonderful video called Journey to Detroit. It's not about Detroit. It's about transit and development, and it's really well done. It's by America2050.org, which is a planning agency in New York City, and it really inspires you about what can happen along a rail line and, a Metrolink and the possibilities, and it's—I think it's 3 minutes long or something. It can be found on YouTube. Journey to Detroit.
All right, Pam. Well, thank you for that tip. We'll look it up. Let's bring in Claudia calling from St. Louis.
Hi. I think you probably answered the question previously. My main question was for TOD development, and especially when you're dealing with different. Municipalities or different cities, how can you develop something that it would be more I guess, for example, I've previous caller talked about the Brentwood Station, how it really does not serve as a walkable development at all, because you can't really walk anywhere without a car hitting you as soon as you step out of the street, the train station. So how can you create some sort of a tool that would allow a better sort of transit-oriented development that would allow the pedestrian to be part of the development, I guess?
Well, the critical point is what your local community is doing. In the TOD study that was recently completed, we looked at all 37 Metrolink stations and kind of came up with a generalized approach to each of those stations, and we did detailed frameworks for five. But the key is asking those questions when you go into these planning efforts. I mean, people don't ask those kinds of questions when we've talked about development. And so we need to make sure those kinds of questions are in front of your community or in front of your, you know, local leadership, and look at ways other places have done this. Look at our framework plan from our TOD study, and, you know, approach your city with it and request that they begin to take action on these things, because it's the local governments that are going to make the difference here, along working with Metro. But Metro's authority in this area is limited to the properties they own.
I believe the expression is the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? That's speak up and make your feelings known. Let's bring in Mike calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Mike. Thanks for waiting.
Yes, I was curious about the 37 stations. What about has high school students' transportation, the cost for that's already being paid out, has that been looked at? You know, for high school students somehow to be filtered into that system, and that would be money into the system, and they would get used to using Metrolink.
All right,
I guess I'll take that one.
Yeah, Ray, go ahead.
Basically, anybody who pays a fare has access to the system, and so we do market to various schools that are, you know, have proximity to, you know, rail and or bus stations in somewhat of a discounted rate in some cases, you know, so that these students do have transit access. So probably the second largest market for transit is students, behind, the workforce going to work every day. We have a lot of people riding the system, and there's some fairly surprising places around town as well.
And as John Langa pointed out in the piece that we aired from Tim Lloyd, young people are really a key to the future of this. I'm referring to, I guess it was the Beacon, or one of the things that I've read is the fact that young people today have no problem walking, and they're green conscious, and that Metrolink plays right, and systems like it play right into their hands.
Some of us old people like it too, you know. Personal experience. I mean, we wanted to move to a place where we could walk again and not have to rely on a car as we got older. And downtown St. Louis kind of fits our lifestyle perfectly. So I think we're seeing in a variety of demographics, people wanting this kind of lifestyle.
Ray, how do you reach out to young people?
Well, I mean, as a father, it was really pretty simple. I always took them on the train everywhere we went when we came downtown. And although I live in St. Charles, which doesn't have any immediate transit access, when my teenage daughters want to come downtown and catch a Cardinal game or a Blues game or something, they don't think anything of, you know, we have to drive our car, but they drive to the nearest Metrolink station and catch the train, you know, to go from there. The region, you know, there's a lot of uses for their. If you don't even live next to it, or you can't walk up to North Hanley Station if you aren't that lucky. Yeah, we have tried to make the system accessible, to share a part of the car market and, take some of that pressure off of the car market and the downtown parking situation, things of that nature.
We're just about ready to wrap up. Jerry, where do you want to be 20 years from now with Metrolink?
Well, I would like to see at least the next two extensions done, along with integrated with bus rapid transit and some unique forms of transit that we haven't seen in St. Louis yet. So if we can get these two extensions over the next 20 years, if we can get some suburban to suburban transit movements taken care of, which I think we'll need, I think we'll be in a good place.
In 15 seconds less, where would you like to see us in 20 years?
Oh, I'd echo what Jerry says. I mean, the first couple of routes are just a down payment. I mean, this is a long-term investment. We're changing the fabric of this region.
And, Ray, do you want to give us 10 seconds worth of where you'd like to be?
Well, I mean, I would agree that the investments in Metrolink can have a significant return. I also would like to say we're moving forward with some bus rapid transit as a lower cost method of doing some connecting of these high job areas and access around the region. And again, one of the things that in some of our studies is we know that people live closer to where they work, and the metro system right now may not do the best job of circulating in close.
I've got to stop you right there. Time is getting away from us. Thank you for Ray Freem, John Lank. We thank him, Les Sturman, and Jerry Blair. Thank you so much. Tomorrow, the chief of police in St. Louis, Sam Dotson, will be with us. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks for listening. I'm Don Marsh.